From Directions Media, this is Directions on the News for Tuesday, March 1st. Each week, this podcast looks at news and trends related to all things location. This is Adina Schutzberg this week in Annapolis, Maryland.
And this is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief today in Shepherdstown, West Virginia.
Every now and again, we receive or read geospatial news stories that make us wonder if they put the technology and its developers and users in the best light. Well, this week we ran into three such stories, and we're going to try to tease out the silver lining, that is, the value of these stories to the geospatial community or the news reading public at large. As a tease, they involve Microsoft, Samsung, and ESRI. But first, a word from our sponsor.
This podcast is brought to you by Esri. You can now access ArcGIS on your Microsoft Windows Phone 7 device. Download the free app from the Zune Marketplace. For more information, visit esri.com/windowsphone.
I have to admit, I had a little bit of a chuckle over some of these stories, but I really tried to take a step back and try to figure out why, not so much why these were newsworthy, but why these stories may have an impact on either our geospatial community or the news reading public out there in the big world. And what we're going to do is go through each of these stories one at a time and see if we can explain why. What is it these bring to the table, in a sense? So let me start with the first story, which is best encapsulated by an email that we received from Microsoft PR. Hi, Adina and Joe. Today, Zimbio Inc. made it easier to keep tabs on your favorite celebrities with their new service called Celebrity Place. Launched today, Celebrity Places uses Bing Maps and unique slideshow format that allows people to see exact locations where various celebrities have been. Each point on the Bing map clicks through to a high-resolution photo album of the celebrity at that location. People can search by location, person, or category and browse through Bing's street map, satellite map, or bird's eye view. And then there's some links and so forth. At first, I thought, oh my goodness, what is going on with the world? And then I really tried to sort of take a step back and look at this for what it is. What I realized was this story and stories like it are actually very important, because what they suggest is that geospatial technology and mapping technology and these kinds of searches are not only for geospatial professionals and environmental professionals and people involved in politics. They're available and should be available to the TMZ crowd. That's the people who are interested in what celebrities are doing and where they're going. And this is a very democratizing kind of thing for geospatial technology. What was your reaction to this story, Joe?
Well, on the surface, it's a wonderful voyeurism for the first part. We want to see where our celebrities are, where they've been, where we might find them. And in truth, celebrity maps have been around for a long time. You go to Hollywood, you take a tour, you want to see where they live, where they've been. These types of things are commonplace, right? Now we just digitize them, right? We're putting them in a digital framework with higher resolution imagery. So on the surface, it's the same old stuff, just in a different format. Underneath, I think Zimbio and others like that are using it as a differentiator. People like to see new technology, and this is something that's new to them. So under the surface, it's just a business differentiator for this website. And you have to applaud them for doing that. And I guess the other thing that came to mind is, whoever is employed to take all of these pictures is looking around going, hey, I just geotagged all of these photos. Now, what do I do with them? And here's the opportunity to put them in a context where people can link a map with the actual photo. So that was my take.
Basically, we've said this is a sort of an opportunity for democratization of geospatial technology. And it, again, highlights the fact that using geospatial technology can distinguish your offering from other offerings on the web, for example.
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, let's move on to story number two. And story number two has to do with Samsung. And Samsung announced a new application, which will be out toward the end of the year. This app maps the geomagnetic fields distorted by indoor magnetic objects. by charting the pattern of the Earth's magnetic field as it warps around household gadgets such as TVs or fridges, the app can tell the difference between a person's desk at home and a desk at work. And I was quoting there from a ZD article. How are you going to use, that is, take advantage of the fact that this device, a phone or a tablet or whatever it may be, is going to know where it is when you set it down? Well, that's really the idea. The way that this application is going to be used is that you're going to basically program the device so that when it is at a certain location, it's going to do a certain thing. So, for example, if it's a phone and you put it down on your desk at home, it might sync up your email. If you put it down next to the TiVo, near the TV, it might download the latest video that you TiVo'd. I'm making this all up. And I have to say, when I started reading this and I started reading about it using geomagnetic fields, I was thinking, oh my goodness, this is a solution in search of a problem. Because really, how hard is it to take your phone, put it down on the desk, and hit a button that says sync my email or download the video or whatever? So this one also made me think, oh, this is sort of silly. But again, if you think about it and take that step back, what it's really highlighting is something that we as geospatial people or people who think about geography may find very obvious, which is that we do different things in different locations. And you do different things in front of your computer at your desk than you do when you're down in the living room with the TV. You start to think about the value of location in terms of what it is you're doing in your life. And I think that's going to help people understand better the value of location-based data and the kinds of things that it might be able to do for you. This is kind of a silly example, but if it highlights for you the potential, then I think it's got value. So it's another educational opportunity. And the one situation that they didn't talk about that I think is really interesting is, what if you take that device that's been programmed to do different things at home and at work and at the TV, and then you go out to a hotel and the phone wakes up and says, oh my goodness, I don't know where I am. And then it does something special, like it rings and it says, tell me what to do. I'm in this foreign location. I don't know what to do.
That's a great example. I don't know if I could think of something that bizarre, but that was a good one. I had trouble not being totally geeked out by this example, because I think it's such wild technology that you're using the magnetic field around certain objects in your location. For whatever it's worth, I do think there's many use cases for this type of device. One that came to mind as you were talking was, what if I took this with me and I'm at a bus stop? Does it automatically ring up the correct ticket that I need to get on the, or the, you know, correct payment charge to provide to the bus driver to say, hey, I'm now on a bus, or I'm at the bus stop and I got to get ready to pay.
That's okay. That's clever. Yeah.
Yeah. I think there are many use cases we can't even think of right now for something like this. And maybe in the future it won't even have to be programmed. Maybe it will sense other types of sensor networks, for example, that will reprogram the device in a certain way. So
right, or maybe you go to the bus stop and there's a little barcode or a QC codes.
Yeah, the QC codes, right.
Right, where it says, if you want your device to ring up the next bus schedule, when the next bus is going to come, or put together the scan code on your phone to pay, just scan this. And yeah, it will automatically make the connection between that particular magnetic field situation and those apps.
Well, and aren't we really talking about devising certain, I don't know if it's classification or auras about certain objects, whether it's a bus, or you're essentially classifying objects by their magnetic field. So I don't know if a bus has a certain signature for a magnetic field, or whether it's standard, or whether it's different for every bus. Maybe it is different. But what I'm thinking of is whether you can identify a signature, a geomagnetic signature, such that your device will recognize it.
Well, I don't think you'd want to associate it with the bus, but rather with sort of the bus shelter, maybe, the things that, that don't move around as much and would have a consistent sort of signature. Okay, well, I think we've come full circle on that one. I think we're both saying, hey, that's not really so silly at all, maybe.
Yeah.
But definitely geeky.
Definitely.
Definitely geeky. Now, the last story we want to talk about was sort of the big news of the last week. And that relates to a story from ESRI where it announced a week ago Friday in an email that it had opened up its ArcGIS online data for free for all uses. And when I wrote about that at All Points blog, I put an asterisk after that all uses, because as I read it, it really wasn't all uses in all situations. And that led to a bit of discussion on the web, and I want to highlight one tweet we saw, which said, "No, it's not totally free, but it's kind of free. How much is it? Who are you with? So it's not free. No, it is free." Confused. And I think that was sort of what was the reaction to this story. I think there were some communication challenges with the information that ESRI wanted to put out, because the email went out on Friday, and then an FAQ that really clarified things didn't appear until Tuesday, and the sort of ramifications of that are still sort of collecting. While this story wasn't silly, it was sort of more head-scratching, I think, than others. You know, why did this happen now, and is there really a change, and is it really free? And I think what this story highlights is that ESRI is still using a business model that other organizations that offer these kinds of services never had, or if they had it, they abandoned it. And in particular, what's different is that while the Googles and the Microsofts and the Yahoos and others who offer APIs against which you can build applications, and they make those free, and they do that mostly because they can get the eyeballs through advertising to make this pay, ESRI is still tied to a very traditional software-based business model where for them to make money, you have to buy their software or buy their services. So that freeness is really tied into you buying those software products still. And that's what I think really comes out of this particular announcement.
Well, and it is apples and oranges when you talk about business models. As you said, Google is an entirely different model. Esri is a software solution provider. Google is making their money off of advertising, not necessarily software all the time. Esri certainly wants to play in that space, and there was a communication breakdown here. It was a miscue, perhaps, on Esri's part.
I think there's also a challenge for the user community of this kind of thing, which would typically be by developers. Is ESRI trying to put itself in the same bucket with the Googles and Microsofts of the world in offering these kinds of APIs and access to data tiles? Or is it trying to be different because it offers data of a different quality that comes from different sources that's put together by different kind of team for different purposes? So it's sort of this issue of, does ESRI want to be part of that group, or does it really want to distinguish itself? That's all the time we have for today. Before we go, our sponsor ESRI invites you to attend an ESRI dev meetup to connect with other developers to discuss geospatial technology and their development languages. This free event is being held in select locations across the United States through May 2011 and includes a key presentation, lightning talks, and a networking social. To register for a dev meetup close to you, visit www.esri.com/devmeetup. If you'd like to comment on today's podcast, you can email us at editors@directionsmag.com or leave a comment at Directions Magazine, where this podcast is hosted.
And just a quick reminder from us here at Directions that we have some great upcoming webinars and Directions On Points. You can find more information at directionsmag.com/webinars. Please also check out our channels. These are new web resources specifically for people in state and local government, location intelligence, location-based services, and remote sensing. So we hope we'll check those out at directionsmag.com/channels.
Thanks for joining us today, and be sure to tell a friend.